the buzzer, McCord on its way.
Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. There's no timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
I'm Seth Greenberg. Welcome to the world's greatest podcast. And we've got an interesting podcast today because obviously with the news last night that Tom Izzo tested positive for the coronavirus, we tried to reach out to him. And fortunately for us, we were able to contact with him. So we're kind of changing things around a little bit. We'll open up the show with Tom Izzo, kind of at his reaction to how he got the virus, or basically the uncertainty of how he got the virus and what he's doing with his team, his staff, moving forward. Then we're going to have Kevin Willard come in and join us. Kevin Willard, the head coach at Seton Hall, has done a magnificent job. And Dan and I will discuss the Big East, four or five best teams, players to watch, the most outstanding freshmen, a team you want to throw a sock at, and more. And following that, we're going to have the great Bob Huggins, who I think is the Hall of Fame coach and should get into the Hall of Fame sooner, much rather than later, on the best rebounding team in the Big 12, and that's the West Virginia Mountaineers. They've got to get guard play. They've got to shoot it better. But West Virginia's a team that can make a deep run. And then Dan and I will also discuss the Big 12 and teams to watch. The Big 12, a team that can get four or five different teams maybe to the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, and Final Four. So Big East preview, Big 12 preview. Tom Izzo from his home as he's recovering from the virus, a positive test on the virus. Stick around. Courtside's coming at you. Coach Izzo.
What's happening, buddy?
What's going on, brother? How you feeling?
You know, really, I feel pretty good. I mean, I got a little, I cough a little bit once in a while, and I had a little chills the first 2 days, but I don't feel bad. I'm a little tired just because I don't sleep much, but other than that, I'm okay, but I have no clue how I got it. I mean, I was so vigilant, it was scary. And that bothers me. I just don't know how. Kel Perry called me and said, I don't know how we're going to play the season. I said, I will play it. But he's
we'll
right.
Figure it out. Just don't know. Scary. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was the timeline? What transpired? Like, I mean, here you're coaching your team. You get ready
for the
season.
We're testing every day. You know, we're antigen testing. So I've been testing for 2.5 weeks every day. And, Friday, nothing all last week, all zeros. And Saturday, I felt, just coughed a little bit. But, I mean, God, you think no big deal, a little bit. Same with Sunday. And then tested negative both days. And then Monday, all of a sudden, tested positive. And then I went to see the PCR test, and I tested positive again. And so now I'm out for 10 days, it's just, it's tough, but, as we're talking, I'm watching practice on Zoom. So I guess the advantage of technology.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So now once you tested positive, all your guys had a test. Loopy had a test, Rocky, Steven, the whole crew had a test.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But I mean, I'm not really, Loopy, but Rocky and Steven tests every day cause he's with the team. He's lived there. Rocky's been home, but I haven't, I hardly ever see her, so there was no real contact tracing there. And they've all tested negative. That's the screwy part of this whole thing. So I'm just happy my team's okay, and, I'll rough it and see what I can get done. But I tell you what, guys, it's a strange, I've said I've been so tired of all the political stuff and this and that. But the bottom line is, we can argue a million things. It's still a virus. It's still very contagious, and it's invisible, and that makes it difficult.
Yeah, because everyone I've talked to, all your guys. By the way, Max, the beard, not a good look.
Not a good look at all, and worse yet, he came in the other day because it's 75 degrees here in shorts. So you got Max in the shorts and a beard. There's visual pollution signs up all over campus. It's amazing.
But everyone says the same thing, that you've been incredibly vigilant. No one comes in your office. You've been smart in practice.
You know why I, you know why I overdid it? Because I say that because, you know, our 21-day thing is difficult. You know, you think about it. If one of my guys gets it like that week of Thanksgiving, if he gets the virus, he's out for the entire non-conference schedule because we play 18 or 7 games in 18 days. Right. And it's just hard to believe when you think of it that way. So I just kept saying, I mean, we test every day, 7:30, go to our staff meeting. We sit in our staff meeting with masks on. There's no reason to, cause we all tested negative at the time. But we did it anyway. We even masked up during that period. So I wish I knew how, cause then I could help somebody, but it is what it is. And I just got to make sure that I, take care of myself and maybe more important, make sure our players are safe because they're the ones who are going to win games for us.
What was their reaction when they heard you? I mean, like they kind of look at you as almost invincible, let's be honest. So, like, what was their reaction?
Yeah, I think they do look at me as invincible. What bothered me is when they started cheering because they knew I was out a week and a half. But you know, I do think, and I told my staff this, I said, they know what I've done. They know how much we get together out on the floor. You know, we're all tested negative. And anytime we even come close to huddling up distantly apart, we always say mask up. Everybody masks up.
And your guys even wear masks at time of practice, right?
No, our players don't wear them during practice. But, I mean, if we huddle up or anything, they do. If we get together to go over something, they do. Any lecture stuff, they do. And even though we stay social distance, but the coaches, trainers, everybody else is always masked up. And I think, like you said, I mean, I think they looked at it like, wait a minute, this crazy guy that's on us morning, noon, and night about it, and then he gets it. And I told him, I said, no, I don't want you guys going behind my back and laughing because they know how diligent and I've been about it. But I also told my staff that, you know, I mean, this is just proof it can happen to anybody. So I think in their own way, you know, they just, now that the season's going to start in those 21 days, somehow we're going to make this negative a positive. I really mean that. It also give time for my staff to grow and they can take over. And I told those assistants, as you can appreciate, Seth, now all those great ideas, yeah, now you can put them to work and see if they work as good, you know. And then I also said that for my coaches or my players, they can bond together too. The captains have to run the team, sort of. Player coach teams, in my mind, are always better. And we're going to find out if that's true.
Who's running practice for you?
DJ. DJ's my, you know, associate head coach that's there. But now I'm able to have Wojcik on the floor. He's been a head coach. Dane's been a head coach. Mike Garland's been a head coach, so they're doing a good job. I'm watching them on Zoom these 2 days, and, you know, they're doing a good job. Everything's good. It's just this practice, Seth, and I'd be interested to know what other guys think, but it's been a long time with no games, you know, exhibition games. Usually we played an exhibition game or two by now. You know, it's hard to have scrimmages because it's hard to get officials, and so it's been hard on these guys. You know, they've gone a long grind. At least now the end's near. We can start preparing for a game. And hopefully our schedule comes out, I think, by the end of this week. And we start rocking and rolling.
How do you simulate games when you obviously you have a limited number of guys? Like you said, you don't have that, you know, other team to play against. You don't have that scrimmage against Gonzaga. You don't have a litmus test to say, all right, this is where we are right now. You have an idea, but now you're going to go 10 days without having your hands on your guys. And then after that, shoot, you're what? 10 days from now, you're like 4 or 5 days away from playing.
Yeah. And then we, like I said, 7 games in 18 days. So, I mean, they come fast and furious the way it looks, but it's going to be interesting. You know, as you said, I mean, we've got a lot of things to cover, and you know, we've got to get Rocket and Foster at the point, and Joey Hauser hasn't played in a game in over a year, and he's going to be a key spot at that four position. And you know, the Aaron Henrys, who were you know, a third option, are now the first and second. Him and Joey, now the one encouraging thing, Seth, and I know you know he's a good player, is we've gotten a lot out of Josh Langford. I mean, I'm not saying he's back to where he was, but he's such a good kid. He's worked so hard. He's my best two-way player by far. And we could be really good with him, Rocket, and Aaron and Gabe on the perimeter there. We could be really good defensively, really athletic. And I think a team that, like old times, will be able to switch more and do some things. But it's going to be a work in progress. I think it's going to be that way for everybody, Seth. And he who handles this adversity the best is going to win games, because I think we're all, if we look at football, you know, Penn State's all of a sudden 0-3. Is that because they're not as good, or is that because they just haven't handled adversity? You know, Michigan, 1-2, and four, you know, these teams are all ranked in the top 10 or 15. And I think you're going to see the same stuff in basketball. You just hope it's not your team.
I'll tell you one thing. I've said this now for the last 2 weeks. The coaching staff that understands this is part of the process, all the players, and I joked about, you know, about the guys thinking you're invincible, but look, they're all looking to their coaches on how they're reacting, whether someone gets the virus, so whether it's a contact tracing issue, whether a game is canceled or delayed, whether, you know, when the schedule's coming out, when it's not coming out, what can we do, what can't we do? The most even-keeled right now, these kids need something to say, all right, it's going to be all right, and stability. Yep. So how and anyone else in the staff, any staff reacts to the adversity, that's how they're going to react, don't you think?
I do 100%. I think you've spoken like the experienced coach you are. It's 100% what I think is going to be a difference-making part of this whole season, because we're going to run into it, and it's not going to be just once. I mean, we've had 7 guys that have had it. Now they'll be in for round 2 about the middle of December. So, you know, it's not, you know, they could be getting it back. And I think if you complain about it and, oh, geez, or why me, you know, I think you're in trouble, because there has not been any stability for these guys. I mean, name me a 20-year-old that for the last 8 months is almost locked in his house during, you know, March, April, May, and June, and then locked in his apartment for June, July, August, September, October. You know, it's just not the norm. And I really believe that that's going to be the difference. So I told my guys, let's not complain about anything. And I also told them, everybody better be ready to play, because all of a sudden, I think it was Wisconsin starting their walk-on 4-string quarterback. You know, everybody better be part of the team. Now, there's some pluses to that, too, and how they respond. So I'm actually excited. I think we have some veterans. I think we have some experience. And I think my staff's pretty experienced. And, you know, between the Nassar situation we went through, between Cassius is losing his brother, between the COVID that cut us short of maybe an NCAA run, I do think we're battle tested as far as how to deal with adversity. And you know, we all know now that everybody's gonna have to deal with it.
Yeah. How about your front court? Like, I mean, you lose obviously Xavier, who, you know, look, we all hope to go somewhere in the first round. Anyone emerge up front?
You know, the two guys that have, I mean, Bingham has been okay, but the two guys that have probably played the best right now have been Kithier and the kid Julius Marble, a tough kid, started coming on at the end of last year. You know, I'm not as worried about it. I think center is going to be by committee. I'm more worried about our point guard, and yet I'm really excited about our wings, because I think we got a lot of guys, Malik Hall, I think Hauser, you know, Aaron, Henry, Gabe Brown, Josh Langford, they can all play on the perimeter. We could be a better shooting team, even though we lose Cassius, because Joey can really shoot it. And I think Josh is back, you know, so we lose some, but we gain some, you know, we lose those two, but we gain Josh and Joey Hauser. But inside, I think center will be by committee. There's nobody that stood out, but everybody's played pretty good.
That's good. Well, the most important thing is you take care of yourself. Make sure you get rest. And I know when you you got the practice on Zoom, then you're going to go back and you're going to watch it again. Then you're going to get on the phone and you're going to call BJ and Fife and Woj and, you know, have those conversations. Then you're going to call them again.
The same thing you did.
Yeah, exactly. Then you're going to call them again about 2 hours later.
Yeah. Call a few players. Then I'm going to, you know, watch some tape on Duke and some of the teams we play early, Virginia, maybe Eastern Michigan, if we finally get the schedule done. And, you know, going to do a little bit of that. One thing I got, Seth, I got all day, man. I sit in my basement like a hermit down there and, you know, nobody bothers me. And,
I'll
be calling you some too.
Yeah, you're staying down. You have a room downstairs, right? You have a guest room downstairs.
Yeah. I'm down there for good now. And, I think my wife's, I think my players are happy that I'm gone. I think my wife's happy I'm downstairs. I'm starting to feel sorry for myself here.
Well, make sure Loopy stays healthy and send everyone our regards. And we're thinking about you and, just take care of yourself, man.
Hey, Seth, I appreciate it, man. I'll stay in touch and you'll probably be getting a call from me in a day or so.
I got nothing going on either, so feel free to call me. I can solve all your problems because I don't have to be held accountable for any of my ideas.
All right, buddy, I'll do it.
Before we start to get into a little bit of previews of the Big East and the Big 12, my man Dan Dockage, with his new headphones, has a little bit of a quick rant. It's got to be a quick rant. It can't be an epic rant because we got stuff we got to get done. But
it's
what's your rant?
I have a question. So last night, I'm hanging with a longtime friend who ended up, he was on his way to Chicago, you know, Valparaiso's. He stopped here, you know, was going to spend the night. Like, I'm sitting right here watching TV. I got my iPad. I don't really use my iPad. It's kind of broke. It's banged up. So I leave it here on this table. Oh, I don't know if you can see it, but this counter over here. And I go to bed. All right? I wake up early because I'm on this new regimen. And the guy says, hey, Dan, I sent a bunch of emails to a bunch of people. I'm like, what are you talking about? So he sent everybody that on my iPad that he recognized, he sent emails to, and I had to send freaking 8 million apologies today saying, hey, man, friend of mine hijacked my emails. Like Coach Knight got one.
No.
Seth, if he recognized half of guys that I knew from Indiana.
What did he send?
Hey, emails. Like a couple of them were, hey, I use your miserable self. Hey, it's from my account, right? And I'm like, dude, what are you doing?
All right, I got my take. I get it. Great prank. First of all, lock your iPad. You know, I'm gonna lock your iPad. You don't have to worry about it. If you don't lock your iPad, it's free game. Great prank. Awesome. Actually, now that I think about it, I might steal someone's phone and send emails.
See, everybody that I know, Taylor, what do you think? Lose the friend? He's been a friend since grade school.
That's tough to lose. You might have to put him on ice for a little bit. Stick him at the end of the bench, you know? That's a little bit dicey.
All of a sudden, you're sensitive.
I'm not sensitive. I don't know.
Like all of a sudden he's sensitive. All of a sudden, oh my God, my feelings have been hurt. He invaded my privacy.
No, that's not it. My feelings aren't hurt. I just wanted to know what you would do. So I'm like, dude, it's like he's leaving it, you know. So the question is, how did he know your iPad? Everybody that like my iPad code is the easiest in the world. So you're right. I got to change the code. We were just talking about it because my iPad's broke as heck, and he's like, "Man,
go buy a new iPad. You know, you can afford it. Go buy a new iPad. You can get a deal. Someone's going to give you a free iPad."
I see that theater room you're sitting in, Dan.
What's that?
All right.
I see that theater room you're sitting in. You can definitely afford an iPad.
All right. Bottom line, great prank. All right. Okay. Great prank. Good.
This look. Now that you've vented it, you killed your friend. All right. Who I think is actually a wonderful individual. The Big East. What's your take? 1 through 4.
All right. I'm going. All 1, 2, 3, and 4 to Villanova. I think Villanova's best team in the country, Seth. I think that Jay Wright makes the world of college basketball look easy. I think that he always has a guy ready. He always has guys coming on. And one of the teams that I'm interested in seeing is Butler, because you know this, Kamar Baldwin, to me, has been
the Mariano Rivera.
Yes. He won so many games, Seth, that they don't have him. Are you going to fall off the map? Because, hey, Seth, UConn's in this league, right? Providence is – this is a serious league. And if you don't have a guy – and I don't know that Butler – to me, Butler, it makes it harder than what Jay Wright does. Do you understand what I'm saying about Jay Wright?
Here's the deal with Jay Wright. Jay Wright's real simple. He keeps everything simple. Take care of the basketball. Shoot about 50% of shots from threes. Keep you in front. Contest your shots. Limit you to one shot.
But don't he always guy. And he's never, never ravaged. You know what I mean? They're never –
They get old and stale.
Yeah.
And they're good. They get Caleb Daniels, a transfer from Tulane, who's going to help replace Sadiq Bey, who's a 6'7 scorer. They've got, obviously, Colin Gillespie. They've got Jeremiah Robinson-Earl, who's talking to Jay, says he's stepping out and shooting it. You know, they've just got a lot of pieces right now. I mean, that's just the way it is. Brian Anton is going to be back, and he's going to be better. Justin Moore had a tremendous freshman year. But here, so how good is Creighton? It's like everyone says Creighton. Obviously, you know, Marcus Zagorowski is everyone's, a lot of people's player of the year. I personally think it's going to be either Colin Gillespie or Jeremiah Robinson-Earl. How good is Creighton? We know they run great offense. We know they're going to get Epperson back, who's 6'11", who gives them rim protection, another front court guy. We know that Bala can make threes. How good is he? Because I think UConn is really good. I think UConn, if they can stay healthy, James Booknight's going to be a first-round draft choice. They get this kid, Andre Jackson, who's a freshman, who's just a freakish athlete. They play hard as hell. They defend. If a cook can get back and he blocks shots, I'm telling you, UConn, as good as everyone's talking about Creighton, I'm telling you one thing. UConn is really good. R.J. Cole, a transfer from Howard, who played for Danny's dad. Last guy to play for his dad is a physical, tough, kind of hard-nosed UConn guy. They got experience. I think they're really, really good.
Let me go to Creighton for a second, and I'm going to talk about style. Like, if I ever went back to coaching, Seth, I'm curious your thought. I would play like Creighton plays. I'd play so damn fast. I'd get down the floor. I'd try to get 80 every night. I'd try to guard if I could, but I love the way they play. I'll tell you something else. Seton Hall loses, Miles Powell. Okay. I like Bryce Aiken a lot to run my team. Harvard transfer, smart, winning.
Coming off a knee injury, though.
I know that, but I if you're going to replace somebody, I'm not mad at him. I'll tell you something else, and this is always makes me laugh, but David Duke and Providence, pretty damn good, man. I mean, Providence to me is, all right, either they play fast? Eh. Do they guard? Yes. I think they're the hardest team to play against in that league. Now, you may disagree with that, but
I'm a big Providence fan. I got them as my top five. I got Seton Hall's five. I got Providence's four. The kid, Nate Watson's a physical front court player. AJ Reeves can shoot it. He's got to be more consistent. David Duke, I talked to Cooley the other day. He said he's a pro, flat out. A pro. Now they got to shoot the ball a bit better, but I think those five teams have separated themselves.
Let me ask you though. Here's the next factor. DJ Carton goes to Marquette. He's eligible. DJ Carton might have been the best point guard in the country. DJ Carton had issues. There's no question he had issues. But when you look at Marquette, I say, well, okay, Marcus Howard's gone, and that's fine. I mean, look, 28 points a night. He was fantastic, but DJ Carton's going to come in there and play. And I'll tell you this, I feel like Woj.
Can you count on DJ Carton? Like, can you count that guy's going to be with you every single day?
No.
Yeah, and that's a concern. And that's a concern, especially this year.
But here's my thing with this. Like, at some point, guys grow up, right? At some point, some guys, it's not till they're seniors. Some guys, it's when they get to college. Some DJ Carton, it didn't work out at Ohio State. They moved along, but he is an uber talented dude, man. And I think Woj is now comfortable. I don't know that Woj is a great coach. I have no idea. That's for their fans to decide. But when I see Woj coach now, I think he's comfortable. Do you understand what I'm saying by that? Like, he's not trying to.
Yeah.
He's not trying to prove. He just coaching, you know. And to me, that's pretty. That's big. That's.
He's not just kicking the team out of the locker room because they lost the game. Because that's what I'm right. supposed to do.
Right.
He's actually just connecting. Although, let's say, here's the deal. Hubie Brown used to say, "You got to connect with your best players." You know, he loses the Housers. He takes DJ Carton. The Housers don't get eligible immediately. All right. DJ Carton does. I mean, you know, there's some things are going, but I think, look, they also have the Garcia kid, the big 6'11 freshman who has a chance to be really, really good player. Marquette's talented. They have a chance. They have a chance to be really good. Who's your player of the year?
This is going to surprise you, but it's not going to surprise you. I'm going to say Colin Gillespie, and I'll tell you why. I think that position at Villanova, that in a wing position, I get it, but I think that position at Villanova is huge. I think David Duke will absolutely be in the running. Look, you know, we talk about talent, DJ Carton, but I think Gillespie is the next in line. You know, going back to what's his name, Reynolds. Remember Reynolds that played there?
Yeah, Scotty Reynolds. I recruited him successfully.
Yeah, but they've always had a guy that. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be an NBA player. Archie Diacono, you know, all of a sudden, I think that until further notice, it's Villanova winning the league. I think it's Creighton scoring the most points. I think it's Providence being the toughest. All right, let me ask you this. Let's go back to UConn for a second. You always say this. You always say coaches can't panic. Coaches have to be even-keeled, particularly in this year. Is Danny Hurley... Is he even keel? Do you trust Danny Hurley?
Well, I had a long conversation with him on Sunday, so I would hope it had some impact on him. We had a long conversation exactly about that, just saying that, look, I've had these conversations with a bunch of guys. How you react to what's going on is going to be the key to how your team reacts. And I think he really does understand. You got to understand, Danny Hurley, when he was at Seton Hall, he had his own personal issues. And I think he's very, very in touch with the mental health aspect of what these are kids going through. And I think that he's going to be extremely patient with the protocols that are in place. But, you know, I think once they get into a good routine of testing, I think he's going to be fine. You know, they're shut down for 14 days. His biggest concern right now is they're shut down for 14 days because that's what their protocol is. They've got 5 days of practice before their first game. So, like, his concern is, all right, when the guys come back, my inclination is practice, 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 practice. But then, you know what? We have injuries because these kids basically can't do anything. They can do some outside conditioning by themselves, but that's it. So I think that's kind of going to be something that's going to be interesting. But I look at Danny Hurley's team. They've got enough experience. They've got enough talent. They've got a go-to player in Bouknight. They've got legitimate depth in their front court. They've got some maturity. I think they're really good. You know, to me, like my newcomer of the year is Andre Jackson, the kid from UConn. He's a hyper, you know, just a big, big-time athlete. I mean, big-time athlete that can run and jump. He'll get out in passing lanes. They're going to be very aggressive defensively. My team to win the conference is going to be Nova. My bold prediction is UConn's going to be an Elite Eight team. UConn is back. That is it. There we go. I think they have a chance, and I'm going to just go through my last one. And my last thing is my throw a sock. Eventually, your guy Travis Steele's got to win games. I think Xavier's a program. You can't be 38-29. You know, you beat Cincinnati, and I like Travis, and I think that he's rebuilding the thing. Eventually, as a program, you know, they expect more of Xavier.
I was going to say that. Here's the bottom of the Big East. You know. When I saw Patrick Ewing's team play early last year, I thought, okay, here we go. And then everybody left. Does he have to win? What's going on at DePaul? I mean, they gave Dave Leto an extension, which is great. But you've got some storied programs with some guys, and Xavier has to be included in that. They're under 500 last year. Xavier is, you know, Seth, coaching in Ohio, it's like, okay, Ohio State. And Xavier and Cincinnati are right there with it, just in Dayton as well in terms of facilities. Then you got when I coached in the MAC, it was a much lower type thing. But I'm with you. Look, the one thing I'll give you a bold prediction. You ready?
All right.
World champion comes out of the Big East.
Oh. Whoa. That is bold. I like that. You're sold on Villanova. You think Villanova, the maturity, game comes easy, good guard play. Jeremiah Robinson Earl's getting better. They don't beat themselves.
Seth, I'm sold on Villanova. I'm also sold. You mentioned UConn being an Elite Eight team. I'm not so sure. And I look around and I think the Big Ten's probably going to be the best conference. But I'm starting to look at things differently in the tournament. I'm starting to look at toughness. I'm starting to look at grit. What do you say? Get old, stay old, that kind of thing.
Get old, stay old.
And I look at the Big East and that's kind of what I see. And I look at some of the better teams, you know, across the country, and yeah, they're good. Top to bottom, I don't see entitlement. Does that make sense?
I think
the national champ comes out of this conference.
That's old school Big East. You're saying they're going back to their roots. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to get an inside into the Big East. Because we're going to have Kevin Willard join us. And Kevin will tell us not only about the Pirates, but his feelings about coaching in the pandemic and what this Big East is all about. And we're going to welcome in Kevin Willard, the head coach at Seton Hall. He's done an absolutely incredible job at Seton Hall. But everyone knows that Kevin came up in the Rick Pitino coaching tree. And Kevin, you know, recently, Tom Abbott-Marco, new assistant at Iona, worked for Rick Pitino. He got run over in practice. and he cracked his hip, and he's doing better. Thank goodness, he's one of the great all time guys, a lifer. But in all the times, I know Rick put a premium on working hard and being engaged in individual workouts. And in all the years you worked for Rick, and all the years your dad worked with Rick, did you ever get taken out in a practice? I know you've been fired in a practice, but have you been taken out in a practice?
Well, I tell you, the year we went to the Final Four, we had Francisco Garcia, Tyquan Dean, Larry O'Bannon, and what he used to do is he used to make the assistants play live one-on-one defense in a drill called threes, twos, and ones. And so you would pass the guy, he'd shoot a three, you'd pass it, he'd ball fake for a two, and the one was you actually went up and tried to play one-on-one defense. And I remember I always got Francisco because he just loved abusing me. And after every individual, me, Reggie Theus, and Vince Taylor, we would be in the tubs for like an hour because our knees were swollen, our feet couldn't move. And it was like, and this was 5 days a week. And it was brutal. But we got to the Final Four. So I always say that Reggie, Vince, and I, kind of our defense kind of got us to the Final Four.
That's probably the first time Reggie guarded anyone.
Coach, no disrespect to you, but in the pantheon of basketball players, who doesn't belong in this picture? Reggie Theus, Kevin Willard, or Vince Taylor?
It's definitely me, man. I mean, I think that's also why Francisco always wanted me, because he knew I was he had the easiest way. He could just shoot over me. He used to post me up. He put me into the
no respect for the former Pitt point guard. That's unacceptable.
No, that's not it. But I was when I was a kid, I was a big Reggie Theus fan, both with UNLV and with the Bulls. And then Vince Taylor coming out of high school in my world in the Courier Journal out of Louisville, man, he was the man. Correct. Vince Taylor. Are you kidding?
Correct.
They were great, great players. No disrespect, bad.
No, trust me. I agree with you 100%, Dan. We used to play 3-on-3, full court. And I tell you what, I mean, this is going back 15, 16 years, but Reggie could still flat out play. I mean, I was shocked when we started going up and down. Just, you know, I knew how good Reggie was, but I couldn't believe how good he still was as a player at his age. I mean, he could still just flat out light it up.
Wow. Hey, that was 3-on-3 at 5 o'clock in the morning, Chris. Rick wanted to come in at 5 o'clock in the morning to play 3-on-3. Yes or no?
He got a little older. It was like 5:30, 5:45 at that time. The Kentucky days, I remember my dad used to he used to sleep in his clothes because he had to wake up so early to go play 3-on-3.
Hey, and Rick calls every foul. That's foul. That's a foul.
Oh my goodness.
Oh man. All right. So hey, give me the scoop first. My, you know, Miles Powell gone. Quincy McKnight gone. Gill gone. First of all, just your feeling on Miles Powell in the draft. What are you hearing? He's an incredible, incredible young man.
Yeah, you know what, Seth? Everything we've talked to, everybody we've talked to, everyone's really excited about him just because he's one of those guys you can put, especially on the NBA court, with the amount of spacing that the NBA has now. He's one of those guys you can put on the court, and he's only going to help spacing. And with the premium on the three-point shot, and guys that can knock it down, you know, he's one of those guys that if you put on a team that has a superstar or two, you can put him in the corner. He's only going to help create space and be a guy that makes shots. So not only can he do that, but he's a phenomenal teammate. He's a phenomenal person. It'll be great for an organization. So, you know, everything we've heard, late first round, early second round, you know, it's been hard for these guys in the draft. I feel bad for them because they're going crazy because they've just been by themselves working out. But we're excited. It's only a week away now.
Seth always says you got the coaches that are going to be even keeled, all that kind of stuff, are going to have the most success in these weird times. How much are you and your staff monitoring? I don't know if monitoring is the right word, but paying attention to, and I'm being literal here, literally where kids go when they're away from your program.
Oh, yeah, Dan. I mean, I think it's something that, you know, I think you have to be really careful with how much you monitor them. I mean, you still have to make sure that they are, they have their personal space away from the game, away from you. But I think what we've really tried to do is educate our guys about where probably we shouldn't be and where we shouldn't go. And I think, you know, we've been back in the gym since July 20th. I mean, we've taken, you know, 3 tests a week since July. We haven't had a positive. And I think what we've tried to do more than anything, our team doctor, our trainer, and myself, is just educate our guys about where the likelihood of that you could catch this virus. I mean, obviously, it's a virus, so you can catch it anywhere. But our guys have been really good about staying away from certain areas and certain parties or places. They've been very focused on getting back and playing basketball. I think that's something that if you talk to every college player, they just want to get back and play games. And so I think they're all taking this responsibility. They understand, you know, what a positive test does. So they've been great. And it's just continue to educate them, continue to remind them. But I also don't want them living in a bubble where they're not enjoying themselves or their friends, because this isn't something that you have to hide in your room for.
Yeah, boy, it is a difficult balance. There's no doubt about it. How are you guys? So you lose Miles, you lose Gill, you lose obviously McKnight, who is a terrific defender. Where are you guys right now? Where's the health of your team? Where's the physical health, the mental health? Are roles starting to be defined? I mean, you know, where's your team right now? Being you have been with them for a while.
Yeah, I think, you know, you hit on something, Coach, about mental health. And that was obviously when we all got locked down in March and everybody got sent home. You know, the first month, I think the guys were really good. But as it dragged on, my president was phenomenal. My team doctors were great in understanding that, you know, for me, getting them back on campus was nothing more than for them mentally to get back to something normal. And when they got back in July 20th, I mean, we didn't do any team stuff and we hardly did any basketball stuff because they were so detrained. But for the most part, I really focused on their mental health, getting them in a good spot, talking about some of the social issues that were going on. I'm really just trying to get them to kind of get back into a normal rhythm. And, you know, as I moved into September, we started picking up basketball wise and I like where my team's at. They are, I think they all understand that there's a great opportunity. You know, I think they understand Miles took 24 shots a game. So there's a lot of shots coming down the pipeline and there's a great opportunity for guys to step up. And I love guys like Sandro, Jared Roden, I think is going to be, you know, is going to have a monster breakout year. Miles Kale finally has a chance, not just having to be a great defender, but having a chance to play a little offense. So I think guys are excited about the roles that they have. And there's some guys that are going to step up, but I think you're going to really shock a lot of people.
I saw John Rothstein the other day said that Bryce Akins isn't playing, isn't doing, is not been cleared. What are your expectations for him?
Yeah, Dan, you know, I think, you know, so, you know, obviously we're really excited to have Bryce, but, you know, he's kind of come off of, you know, a career where he's battled some injuries. So, you know, what we've done with Bryce is really focus more on just getting his body as healthy as possible through, you know, what, a little better nutrition, strengthening, you know, medical care, you know, just making sure that we're giving him everything he needs to get his body, you know, not only for this year, but for his career 100%. So we've taken it really slow with him. He's been doing individual workouts every day. He works hard. He does dummy offense. He does dummy defense. You know, he probably could have been cleared by now, but I don't think it's more on my side that I just think this is a young man that understands the game. He's going to understand what we're trying to do. And for me, it's more about just getting them to the starting line and getting them to the finish line than it is just getting them to practice. So I think he's looking good. Will he be available for the opener? I'm not sure about that yet.
And talking of openers, like how your schedule, I mean, obviously it's bounced around a lot. Where are you out with it? And I know it's a blank show, as you call it. Are you close to buttoning it up, or is it a daily kind of?
No, I mean, we're starting with Winthrop and Louisville down in Louisville, you know, two really tough games to start. And then we come home, we play Baylor at home, another tough one. Then we go at Rhode Island, which is another tough one, and at Penn State, which is another tough one. And then we play Wagner. And then I'm only scheduling six because the Rutgers game, I just didn't, you know, because of the Big Ten ACC Challenge ate up a big chunk of their week. We're going to try to play the Rutgers game through a bye week during the conference play. So, you know, my schedule is pretty much set. And then Big East play starts December 11th now. So, you know, I think it was really, and Seth, you did scheduling for years and years and years. So, you know, you're not only scheduling for this year, but you got to worry about next year. And that was really the hard thing. You just couldn't really just get games for this year. You had to concentrate about, you know, what's your team going to look like next year? Who do you want coming in? Who do you want to play on the road next year? So it was kind of one of those things that you just kind of had to really be patient. And then it kind of all worked out the way we wanted it to work out.
When you go practice, and so people understand, I had Lavelle Jordan tell me that his team practices in masks. I'm talking about the players. Do your teams practice in masks?
So we do not. You know, all of this has to, you know, I know the NCAA came out with guidelines, but those are kind of, be perfectly honest, they're kind of irrelevant because everything really kind of falls on your local board of health and what your local board of health says and does. And it's more about contact tracing than anything else. So we've really, you know, we've worked with our local board of health and we're meeting with them again, hopefully this week, just to show the plan that we've done, the amount of testing that we've done. The coaches are in masks. I think the biggest difference for me is, you know, I've social distance from my players, my staff as we, you know, we stay, I would say 10 to 12 feet away from them. And it's been harder times to try to make corrections and try to get a kid in the right way. But, you know, what we've tried to do is, you know, we don't do film sessions. We don't have any meetings with any of the players in a room. It's all in the gym. Just in case we get tested positive, you know, we can just sub myself out or one of my staff members out. So we've been very, I think that's the biggest difference, Dan, is we've been very, the staff is almost socially distanced from the team. You know, we stay 10 feet apart at all times because it's the contact tracing that really gets you. It's not anything else. So I think as we move forward, you know, the fact that we're testing so much, you know, we have to be able to use those tests to be able to contact trace and keep guys moving forward. Because if we're not going to use months and months of testing where we know exactly where we've been and what these guys have been, you know, it makes no sense to test as much as we are. So I think that's our goal. And I think that should be everyone's goal with the local board of health is really to come up with a plan of using the test to help you contact trace of getting everybody into quarantine.
I can't even imagine, like, you know, obviously, especially when you have a new team, you're trying to do some new things with them, you know, the whole things, like things you took for granted, having a player come over to the office, watch film, you know, having two players come over, individual workouts, really kind of getting engaged with a player, you know, means being like, you know, putting your arm around them, you know, encouraging them, you know, doing different things with them. And it obviously changes the way, you know, way you're going to coach. Speaking of the way you're going to coach, Tekal Molson played at Canisius, sat out last year, correct?
Correct.
How good? I mean, you know, again, you lost a guy that I think was underappreciated on your team in Quincy McKnight. I thought that guy was just a tough, fierce competitor, excellent defender, and brought a winning player. Where is Molson in relation to that type of player?
Yeah, that's a great analogy, Coach. It's, you know, Tekal reminds me of Alpha Diallo from Providence. He's one of those guys. I can put him in pick and rolls. I can post him up. You know, he's shooting the basketball better than he did when he was at Canisius. You know, he's kind of a junkyard dog, man. He goes out there, he makes winning plays. He's very unselfish with the basketball, which I love. You know, when he can get in the lane, but you know, he's not hungry to score. He's hungry to win. And you know, he's a guy who can play at the 2, 3, 4. He can guard 1 through 5. You know, and again, when I look for transfers, I look for guys that really, you know, that love winning. And that's, you know, why Tuck came, is he wanted to come to a winning program. And I'm excited about him, Coach. I think he's, you know, a guy that no one really talks about. And he's kind of under the radar, and all of a sudden he's going to show up on the 25th and he's going to put up, you know, 17, 10, and 8. You know, he's got that ability.
Coach, what's your overall thought of the Big East?
Well, you know, I said this last night to somebody. Obviously, I think Villanova, until someone can knock them off, is the cream of the crop. And I love what Jay has done. He's built, in my opinion, the best basketball program in the country. I just think it's second to none. The way his players play, the recruiting at such a high level now, and obviously winning 2 of the last 3 national championships. I like Creighton this year. I really do. Zigorowski is one heck of a guard. He is really tough to stop. And as fast as they play with Ballack running around, shooting threes from everywhere, they're a tough matchup. I think UConn's going to be, you know, really good. You know, I didn't really watch UConn play because I don't watch anybody really outside the Big East. But, you know, they got some really good players. Danny teams are so well defensively. And then, you know, Providence, I think Eddie's got a chance. He's got some seniors. He's got some older guys. And then I think the rest of the league it's really tough to explain to people, Dan, because we play so many different styles. We have guys that play zones and matchup zones. We have guys that get run up and down. You know, Nova grinds you out. Xavier grinds you out. So I think the league top to bottom is going to be just like it is every year. But I think Nova has a chance to win the championship. I just think they're that good.
All right, I got to ask you this question. We're going to let you go. I just got a kick out of it. When I guess Big East media day on some conference call, you kind of said, shoot, I didn't want UConn anything. Or, you know, Danny's a pain in the ass or whatever it was. You know, two coaches' kids kind of whining a little bit, which I thought was hilarious. I thought it was just good old school Big East banter. You know, like you know, back in the old days, everyone would just kill each other and compete, but had a lot of respect. I was shocked at the response people got, because I thought it was hilarious. What was your take to the response that people had to your snarky comments?
It's America. Everyone gets offended by everything. I was answering the question honestly. They asked, you know, what do you think about UConn coming in? I said, you know, for Seton Hall, it's not great. They're a great program. Danny's a great coach. They've really good players. I said, but for the league in general is phenomenal. You know, you're bringing back a founding member, a program that's won national championships, a legendary coach, Jim Calhoun, built it. Now Danny's doing a phenomenal job. You know, everyone cut out the part that I thought it was great for the league and Danny's a great coach and they have great players. They just went to the fact that I was being honest that, you know, for Seton Hall or for individual programs, bringing a great program into your league doesn't mean it's great for that individual program. And, you know, people don't like honesty. People want to say, you know, I guess people just want to hear, you know, the BS that like, oh, it's great and this is great and everything's wonderful. But, you know, that's not really the reality of the situation.
It's recruiting New Jersey harder, man. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. I thought it was absolutely awesome.
I thought it was good. I just laughed at people like lost their mind of going, this is just – you know, this is a bunch of coaches just talk. I mean, it's true. Right. I mean, it's the way it is. And got, oh my God, I can't wait. This is going to be a great. Everyone competes against everyone. I sat there and I said, all right, if those guys ever sat in a Big East meeting, they'd really shit their pants.
that is the truth.
Right? I mean, come on, man. I mean, just even when Ed Cooley opens up his mouth, it gets good.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, and again, I'm friends with Dan. I love Dan, and I think he's a great coach. But it's like, you know, my job is to beat him. You know, his job is to beat us. So it's, you know, I'm not friends with UConn. You know, it's not, and I won't be.
That's awesome. That's so good, Kevin. Thank you, Kevin.
Hey, make sure you tell your boss.
I appreciate it, guys. I enjoy listening to you guys. So thanks for having me on.
D squared. Big 12. You see, I think the Big 12 could be the best conference in college basketball. I think it's right up there, nose to nose with the Big East, with the Big East and also the Big 10. And, you know, there's just a lot of teams in this league that could get to the Final Four and win national championship. I'll give you my top four. Tell me what you think. Baylor, ridiculous guard play, elite defense. Mark Vidal, who just a relentless competitor. If Tristan Clark comes back, healthier, obviously, they got to replace Freddie Gillespie. I like Baylor. Kansas, I think Marcus Garrett's one of the most underrated players in the country, without a doubt. Oshae Agbaji is a very, very tough matchup. David McCormick, I think he has to step in. No one replaces the immovable object, Udoka Azubuike. No one replaces him, all right? But I think that he'll be functional. I think Bryce Thompson's going to give him a little bit of scoring, and I love the Brown kids. So I think Kansas, they defend, they're physical. Again, they're not going to have the same home court. I think West Virginia, now, concern with West Virginia, you got to take care of the basketball. You got to shoot it better. But their front court is ridiculous. They are dominating in the front court. They can shoot it with Shibway and Culver. I think that they're a team that can make a deep run. Then Texas Tech, all kinds of new pieces, but they still have Kyler Edwards. They still have Terrence Shannon. You know, to me, this kid, Micah Peavy, who everyone's talking about, Namari Burnett, I'm telling you, Micah Peavy is a 6'5" winning player. Terrific. They get Marcus Silva Santos, the big kid from VCU. The ball just finds him. This team defends. And you talk about styles of play. They run real motion. And teams that can run actually run real motion. As the season goes along, they get better. It also makes them better defensively because they can guard anything and they can guard it on instinct. They force people to make plays. They take you out of your offense. Like the teams that they play against make the fewest assists of anyone in the Big 12. Why? Because you can't run offense. They're forcing a player to beat them. So those are my top four with Texas just on the outside.
Did you know last year in the Big 12, only two teams finished over 500? Only
two. That's crazy.
That is crazy. And you know crazy. Who finished 17-1? Kansas. I'm not ever picking anybody other than Kansas. And let me ask you a question. If you were having a just college draft, okay? Just a look, this is just college. Where would Marcus Garrett be picked for a year? Not a career, not a, you know.
I love him.
I know, I do too.
I love the dude. He can post feed, he can defend, he can get in the lane, and yeah, he doesn't shoot him great, but that dude wins. He's a grown black man.
And I'm with you. Hey, look, you and I talked to Scott Drew on his podcast and Jared Butler and the whole group from there. I think they're terrific, but I don't see – look, I'd like Baylor. Baylor's smarter than anybody, I think, in terms of what they're doing with schedule, Seth. I mean, they're playing – they're playing anybody and everybody, and I'm cool with that. That's just in this year, like I'm great with that. West Virginia, hard to play against, but do you know what West Virginia's record was last year in the Big East or in the Big 12?
Well, they had a stretch where they were 1-6.
They came back and got, that's exactly right. They came back and got 9-9. Here's my thing with Hugs, and first off, I think West Virginia in the Big 12 is a bad fit. Having said that, I mean, it's just, it doesn't make sense to me.
Especially now with the travel.
You got to shoot the ball, Seth. Like, you got to put the freaking ball in the basket. So, I think West Virginia will win their home games. They're tough enough to win on the road. I think they'll be in the top three, maybe third after those. And for the same reason, I'll say Texas Tech, because let's be honest, do we believe in Texas Tech, or do we believe in Texas to win tough games? Which team? I'll tell you which team I believe. I believe Texas Tech far more than I believe Texas to win big games. I mean, I think Texas Tech has a nationally understated culture of toughness.
I think Texas
has an overstated opinion nationally, because we've seen big time players, we've seen five-star recruits, but we've also seen them not win. And again, do you think, like you mentioned Travis Steele when we did the Big East, but isn't it about time Shaka gets it going a little bit? See, I feel the same way about Texas football. Every year I hear Texas football is back, and every year I watch him go whatever. Same thing with Texas basketball. I mean, some point, you got to go win.
Yeah, no. I agree. So, like, here, I have Texas as my fifth team. I also have Texas as my team. I'll throw a sock at. And the reason being is, they get Greg Brown, who's an uber athlete, ferocious competitor, great rebounder. So they have, and then they have another front court guy that has a chance to be really good. They've got their backcourt back, which is good, you would think. Courtney Ramey, Matt Coleman, Andrew Jones. I mean, they've got guys back, you know, who you want to root for, first of all. I mean, let's face it. I mean, how can you not want to root for a kid that's coming back from beating cancer? Here's the deal. They're a veteran team that turned it over 20% of their possessions.
They're a
veteran team that, you know, basically couldn't control the rhythm of the game in big games. Now, I think, in my opinion, you know, they've got Jericho Sims, who's in the front court player, who's an experienced player. At the end of the season, they played better. They played a guy named Brock Cunningham. They had Brock Cunningham. I took him to Italy with this Adidas trip. Brock Cunningham is the hardest playing, most physical player I've ever been around. He is like a rock. He has no ego, and he just wants to knock the snot out of you. I think if you play Brock Cunningham, what he did at the end of the season, he was a reason. It had nothing to do with anything in stats. It had to do with the mentality. If the guards can take care of the basketball with Brown and other pieces they have, they'll be fine. If they don't take care of the basketball, every year we're saying, you know, guard play. Do they have a Big 12 backcourt? Because you got to have a backcourt in the Big 12. So they're my surprise team, but they're also my team that, quite honestly, I could be throwing a sock at.
My team, Seth, my player of the year, I'm going with Jared Butler, because I think he's going to do more. Marcus Garrett would be right there. But you mentioned a Cunningham. Let's talk about maybe the best player in the country with Oklahoma State, Cade Cunningham. Let me ask you this. When Zion Williamson and that crew went to Duke, it was automatic. They're top five, top one, whatever. And I know there's sanctions and they may not get in the tournament. Okay, but I'm not talking about the tournament just yet. What does Cade Cunningham elevate this Oklahoma State team to a top 10 team? There's four Big 12 teams basically in the top 25. Does Cade Cunningham elevate them? Is he that good?
Well, they also have Isaac Likely, who I think is really, really good.
They also got off to a great start last year and then fell apart.
Yeah, but I mean, so their backcourt is legit. Now, they got to shoot it better. Cade Cunningham makes the game simple for everyone. He's who you need to be when you need him to be. He's got size. He's got vision. You know what? I would have said yes. To me, the one concern, like Isaac Likely is really, really good. I love their backcourt. I think a big loss for them is the kid Urinai, the kid who transferred, the big shot blocker. I mean, that would have been the kind of the heart and soul of your defense. So you have a lot of young players that are going to have to step up and make plays. But he's good enough. Cade Cunningham's player of the year in that conference. He's going to put ridiculous numbers up.
Hold on.
In the conference, and he's going to be the number one pick in the draft.
What will his numbers be?
I think his numbers will be like 18 to 20, 6 to 8 assists, and 6 to 10 rebounds.
Over, under, 4 triple-doubles.
I'm going to say, because I'm not sure about their shot makers, I'm going to say probably under.
Over under.
Every person I talk to, when you watch him on tape, and every person I talk to, everyone who's coached him, you know, from the USA basketball people, just say he's incredible. Like, incredible teammate, incredible work ethic, plays without ego, easy to be around, genuine. You know, he's the total package. And that league is just, you know, you look at the upper part of that league is fiercely competitive, because we haven't even mentioned Oklahoma. All right. And the one thing obviously you all know about teams coached by Lon Kruger is that, you know, look, they're going to be well coached. They're going to make shots. They're going to play with good spacing. They're going to play hard. Brady Mick's back. Reeves is back, who's a very good shooter. You know, I think David Harmon's back. I mean, they've got pieces that are back that can do some things. The league is, I think it, the league overall, hard travel league. Now, I think the one thing that maybe the level, the playing field is going to be, you know, playing on Kansas isn't going to be like playing at Kansas. You know, the best home court in the league is no longer the best home court in the league. And I think that's going to be interesting. I think the other thing is West Virginia, they're going to go back-to-back road trips because just for the travel, how they handle that. And then, you know, let's face it. I mean, the bottom of the league isn't as good. I mean, I don't know where Kansas State is this year. I think they're a year away from being what they need to be. TCU loses Desmond Bain. I think they still got Kevin Samuels, who I think is a legitimate front court player. They've got Nembhard, who I think is a good, solid perimeter scorer. But I'm not sold on TCU. I'm not sold on Kansas State. But I still think the league is just fiercely competitive and really well coached.
You mentioned Lon Kruger, and he might be the most underappreciated coach out there. Look, Brady Manek is in his 27th year. Austin Reeves can go. I like their team. You know, I like Huggs's team, but I saw the other day they shot 26% from the 3-point line. Now, I hate to harp on this, Seth, but I'm a big believer, man. I am a big, big believer in you got to score points and you got to shoot the damn ball. I don't care if you're in high school, grade school. Let me ask you this: Georgetown transfer, Mac McClung, how will he impact the league? Will he impact the league?
You know, it'll be interesting. Look, no one integrates guys better maybe than Beard. And the reason being, think about where the guy started. He's a former junior college coach. He's a small, you know, Division III coach. He's a guy that's coached semi-pro basketball. I mean, this is my team. I'll put it together. I'll figure them out. And he doesn't look at it as a burden to put pieces together. Matt McClung's going to have to give up a little bit of himself for the good of the group. That's just the way it is. I mean, you know, the rumor on him is that he was a little selfish. I don't know the kid. His shot selection is going to have to improve. He's going to have to commit himself defensively. If anyone can get the best out of him, it's going to be Chris, because Chris builds these unbelievable relationships with players. But I'll tell you what, Texas Tech's got a kid, Terrence Shannon, who's an absolute beast. Kyler Edwards is an experienced player. Marcus Santos Silva, the transfer from BCU, the ball just finds him. It finds him. He's an under-the-rim rebounder that you wedge rebounds. He's always puts himself in position to rebound the basketball. Chris has got a tough job, and he's got to find ways. But they were together this summer. Once they were allowed to, he had his whole team on campus, which I think is really important. They had guys sitting out last year, which I think is just as important. Joel Nwabwe. And I don't want to butcher the poor guy's name, but the transfer from UNLV is going to give him a big physical front court player. And then they've got good role players. So I just think Texas Tech is going to be there. The most intriguing team to me, though, is Texas. It goes back to, you're right, eventually, and Chaka knows, eventually you've got to turn the corner. At Texas, not only you got to get to the tournament, you got to win games. I mean, he's a guy that took VCU to the Final Four. He's a great communicator. He cares about his players. He's been able to recruit high-level players. The backcourt has to produce. If the backcourt doesn't produce, you don't survive in the Big 12. That's just the way it is. And you know what? Talking about the Big 12, do you have a sock team that you're going to throw a sock at them?
Seth, I had a sock next to the bed. I rolled it up. And I said, to Iowa State. I went in to Hilton Coliseum, watched them play Iowa with Halliburton was playing. They laid an egg. I know Rasir Bolton is good, and he, you know, obviously he's been in the news and all that kind of stuff with what happened at Penn State. But I'm a believer that Iowa State, however they've done it, has always been good. I want to throw a sock at Iowa State right now. And I also, the world of college basketball has changed, okay? David Dee Moretti leaving Texas Tech, I think, is huge. He had another year, correct?
Yes, he did. And he's a shot maker.
Guy. He's like a, he's not as good, don't get me wrong, but kind of a college version Luka Doncic. He's played, you know, in big time international stuff. And I think losing him is a big deal. I think they'll be fine. I think they're good. But that dude was good, man. But I'm throwing a sock at Iowa State. Who are you throwing a sock at and going, ah?
Well, my is the backcourt of Texas. Like, here's the thing. I think Texas could be a Sweet 16 team and compete with anyone in the country. Or they can be, yeah. So backcourt is, yeah. You know, it's like Joel, hey. I mean, look, eventually that backcourt has got to produce. They're an upper-class backcourt. Andrew Jones has been through incredible story. Matt Coleman came in as a McDonald's All-American. Courtney Ramey, I had him on my team in Italy. He's a great kid. But as a unit, that group has got to take care of the basketball. You can't turn it over 20% of your possessions. All right? You've got to make good shots. You've got to make good decisions. They'll be as good as that backcourt. Because I do believe that Greg Brown is going to rebound, and he's going to be an active defender. I think Jericho Sims will be better. I think they've got enough other pieces. But if that backcourt doesn't play well, they're back to right on the bubble. And if that happens, you know, it puts a lot of pressure on Shaka. And I'm a huge Shaka Smart fan. I think he's really good for college basketball. I think he's a great communicator. He cares about his players, all those things that we all value. But that backcourt's eventually got to get better. They got to be better offensively.
I'm going to give you a bold prediction.
Go bold.
I got not one, but two Big 12 teams in the NCAA Final Four.
So basically, So wait a second. You got the Big East.
Yep.
All right, being one of the best conferences in the country. All right, and you've got two teams. So there's no one left.
I've got a Big East team winning the championship. I've got two Final Four teams. There's one team left.
All right, and we'll get to that because we're going to be doing previewing everyone. But before we do that, we're going to get a chance to speak to the Huggy Bear, who, by the way, while he was in quarantine-ish type behavior during the pandemic, he looked like he absolutely came out and was out of a hole in the ground with the beard and the hair. He went all coal miner on us. It was unbelievable. And we have to post at some point. We have to post a picture to Huggy Bear, because I'll tell you what, he's going to join us with a tad bit of wisdom on the Big 12, West Virginia basketball, coaching during a pandemic, and just life, because nothing better but hugs. Hugs is a philosopher. You know, he's like Aristotle.
Jeez.
We are excited to welcome in the head coach of West Virginia, the great Bob Huggins, who will be a Hall of Famer, should be sooner rather than later. But Dan Dockage, Huggs, I don't understand this. Obviously, I'm a little worried about Dockage, because earlier in the show, I compared you to Aristotle, a great philosopher. Obviously, Dockage doesn't understand your academic acumen and the prism in which you look at the world through. So would you even take a little offense that he would not appreciate your philosophical?
Wait a second. I did not appreciate it. I just laughed at the comparison. And son, I'm looking up Aristotle now, and I think you might be right.
Well, you know what? Unfortunately for both of you, people nationally get to hear how smart you two are.
Oh, no. Oh, man. I'm as dumb as it gets. And, hey, coach, what have you been doing? Like, are you in the office all day? What do you guys do? Like, what practice, go home, keep players away? What's going on?
Well, for a while, there wasn't much going on. trying to recruit a little bit. You know, this this Zoom thing now, you can dial in about anybody you want, you know. We did some things. We had some people on Zoom talk to our guys, you know, about various things going on in society today and so forth, and just tried to stay busy.
How did you stay busy? Like, your team this year, I mean, you got obviously two mountain masquerading as men in your front court, but everyone says, like, you know, West Virginia, they could be a Final Four team if, and obviously got to make shots and got to take care of the basketball. Where are you guys at in those two areas?
Well, we're probably like everybody else. We're a long way away right now. But we do have the ability to make perimeter shots, and we do have two guys inside who are, I think, premier rebounders in college basketball. So, I mean, we got a chance. But as, you know, you guys know, I mean, it comes down to, I tell our guys all the time, March comes down to making open shots. You don't get very many of them because guys guard a lot harder. And when you get one, you got to make it. And we lost to Gonzaga in the Sweet 16. We had open shots. We just didn't make any. They got some, and they made them all. You know, I think that's the difference is making open shots.
Man, Coach, that's all we talk about. You shot 26% last year from the three. I know you really struggled early, but then you got it going in the league play. What? Are kids able, because of all that's been going on, like, do you anticipate shooting to suffer because kids aren't in the gym as much, or are kids in the gym more because there's nothing else to do?
Well, I can only speak for our guys, but they're in the gym a lot more. Not the bigs as much as the perimeter guys, but the perimeter guys are in there. But, you know, Dan, you talk about us, our three-point shooting, which was miserable. We went through a skid where we didn't win any games. I think we were 1-6 or something like that. And in one particular game, we missed 22 shots inside of 4 feet. Now, you got to work at that now. I mean, that's just not you got to practice that a lot.
You talk about those two big guys. Where do you want to see them improve? Obviously, Culver and Sheway. And how much have they improved?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that's a free throw line. Now, they get to the free throw line a lot, and I think the opponents are happy when they do get to the free throw line, or were in the past. You know, hopefully they can shoot, you know, 70% or so, and then just score inside. I mean, score close. They get a lot of close in shots. They just got to make them. It's an amazing thing to me that. Big guys, I think, are trained not to look at the rim, you know. So they, and I can remember going back to the guys I had, Antonio Wingfield and Payne and Danny Fortson and those guys. And the thing that we worked on the most was just getting your eyes on the rim. I mean, if you're shooting from 2 feet, you ought to make it if you know where you're shooting. I don't think our guys have any clue where the rim is, but we're getting better. How's that for philosophy, Dan?
I love it. Hey, look, Dan, the simplest Dan, is the best.
Dan, you always say in the broadcasts.
Find the blankety blank rim. It's standing right there in every gym. It ain't moving. It's right there.
Yeah, I mean, I've never gone out like they did in Hoosiers and actually measured one, but I would assume that they're all about the same. I mean, within an inch or so.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's amazing. We had, you know, I got one defensive tackle from the football team in Cincinnati came in because I couldn't hit Fortson with the pad. I mean, I hit him and I went backwards. So I got an offensive tackle in there and our defensive tackle, whichever it was, and he said to me, he said, "Coach, can I get help?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Man, this dude is." So he brought in a couple of his buddies. So now there was three of them, and I mean, Fortson literally wore those three guys out, but went on to be an All-American and averaged almost 27 points a game and scored every time he touched it because he put the time in, he put the work in. You know, and I think if you do that, and particularly when you catch it as close as guys catch it, you know, it's all you got to do is start and look at the rim.
That's the simple thing. They had, that's one of Dan's favorite coaching points in his brilliant analysis during games. Put your eyes on head on the rim. What's your phrase, Dan?
Put your chin on the rim. You put your chin on the rim.
Chin
over the front. And you play contact. That's freaking Aristotle right there. Hey, coach, you're going to go. The Coliseum's going to have 25% capacity. Is that what I read?
That's what they're saying. I mean, hopefully this cure comes out and we all get cured. And we'll be able to put people back in there. But I don't know. I mean, I felt a little better about, you know, having people in the stands when I saw watch the Notre Dame Clemson game. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, a little bit. That's unbelievable. Hey, off subject. There's a big discussion going on. Dan Dockage had a friend of his visit yesterday. All right, he had a guy, a friend of his, a longtime childhood friend visit. Dan left his iPad out, went to sleep. The guy then went on his iPad and started emailing random people, including Coach Knight. And then, obviously, just left it there. And then Dan woke up this morning to have to deal with the repercussions. Is that a great prank, all right? Masterful prank.
Or a jackass move.
Or a jackass move.
Well, it's hard for me to say because I don't own an iPad. really don't know how to work one. So I'm probably not the best guy to ask, but I would lean towards jackass if I had an iPad and knew how to work one.
Yeah. I had to send email. Every Indiana player that he recognized, including Coach Knight's secretary, Mary Ann, he's sending them like, hey, you miserable SOB, stuff like that. I'm like, geez, come on, man. It's a jackass move, Hugs.
I personally think it's a great prank, especially because it happened to you.
Yeah, I know.
I just don't know enough about iPads to have much say about that.
Hey, whoa. Last time we talked to you, you were all hooked up in a camera, staring at. We had you on TV here.
But I mean, that's just the sign of the time. We hire people to do that.
I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming.
How about your guard play, Hugs? I mean, on a serious note, like who do you taking care of the ball, initiating, defending the ball? You know, where do you see those guards?
That's a lot of stuff.
I know. No, that's why you're Aristotle, man. Come on.
No, I like our guards. You know, Jordan McDavid in his third year, and he's learned a lot, and he's become, I think, more of a true point guard. Dennis McBride had a great finish to the year last year, and he's a talented and extremely competitive guy. And Sean McNeil can really shoot the ball now. I mean, I'm telling you, I had Lizelle Durden who could really shoot it. Phil Williams could really shoot it. This guy really shoots the ball. And Taz Sherman shot it really well. Junior college struggled last year, but was hurt and sick and all kind of things going on. But he's shooting the ball really well right now. I don't think we're going to have a problem making open perimeter shots. I don't know about creating open perimeter shots, but that's probably good because I'm not sure I want them to do that.
Last thing for me before we let you go, you mentioned recruiting. Like, people ask me this all the time about schools, and I really don't know the answer. Can you have kids come to, you know, a football game? Can you have kids come in on a weekend, or is it simply what you were talking about earlier, just Zoom?
No, it's kind of like we're on an island. No, I mean, the only thing you can do is do that Zoom stuff. And so, you know, you show pictures of campus and pictures of the Coliseum, pictures of the practice facility, so forth and so on. And you hope that they think they're there. But, it's rough. Although, you know, I think a lot of people are getting commitments from kids. We're actually done. We got two commitments from two guards, and so we're basically done. You know, and you know, you can recruit some juniors and so forth, I guess. But I've been trying to concentrate on our guys and help our guys get better.
Hugs, how do you put together a schedule during this mess, and how do you deal with the travel in your league, which is crazy as it is anyway, while this is going on.
Seth, it's been crazy. It's been crazy. And I'm going to say this, and I keep getting in trouble every time I say it, but I think both of you would concur. We've got people making decisions about our game that don't know anything about our game. We got to see. I mean, so we're going to start November 25th. What's magical about November 25th? What about a week earlier, so you don't have to then? And to talk about the betterment of this, you know, taking care of the student athlete and doing what's right by the student athlete. So now you're going to play three games in 5 or 6 days. That's not good for them, particularly if you travel. What was wrong with the start date we had? Let me ask you this. What harm does it cost to have an exhibition game and give the money to charity? I thought that was a noble thing that we did. They've eliminated that. They've eliminated a closed scrimmage, which really weren't closed because everybody knew what the score was, but a closed scrimmage. It blows my mind that the guys that make decisions for us don't know anything about what we do. And, you know, and I can say those things, I guess, because I'm a little long in the tooth, as the old guys used to say. And, you know, I'm about at the end of the trail. But, you know, it just blows my mind. And I didn't realize it till they put me on all these committees. And now I'm on all these committees and I'm looking around at, are you kidding me? I mean, these guys, and they come up with stuff that is just, it blows. Immediate eligibility for a transfer. What good does that do anybody? So now all of a sudden you've got to kind of build a fort around your team so the guys aren't coming in and poaching. And what good does it do the kid? You know, I have said this. I was a transfer. It's the best thing that ever happened to me. I got to practice for a year. Didn't play in the games, obviously, but I got to practice for a year, and I got an extra year of school. So I came out of there with two majors and five minors. You know, and then went on to grad school. And it's, you know, it's just, to me, it makes absolutely no sense. It's not best for them educationally. So you're going to go to one school and then you're going to transfer, be immediately eligible somewhere else. And it's a different, it's probably going to be different curriculums. It's definitely different professors. I just don't understand when we pay sit and talk about academics, and then they pass rules like that that defy academics. It just makes no sense to me. And I keep looking at these committees and I keep saying, wow, I know that guy never hooped. You know, I know that dude never hooped in the backyard. I mean, it just blows me away. And the whole deal is, and you guys know, I mean, you know how they look at us. They look at us as being, all we want to do is win, you know, we do anything to win and all that, which is absurd, which is absolutely absurd. I've got, as you guys do, I know, I've got basically probably 100 of guys out there who I am their resource. You know, when something happens, they call me. When they get a promotion, they call me. You know, so I'm not the bad guy. I'm one of the good guys, like you two are, and most guys in our profession, just about everybody in our profession, are the good guys. We're trying to help those kids do and be whatever it is they want to do and be. But yet we get looked at as we're not intelligent enough to make the right decision, or we're going to do it strictly for us and not for the good of the game. And I think that's absurd.
Man, that is, you are speaking to the choir, because it's the thing that pisses me off most in what I'm doing now, Hugs, is that you sit around and you talk to what I call gurus, and then they get all pissed off because I call them gurus. But that coaches, A, number one, try to help someone get somewhere they can't get themselves, care about their health, their family's health, their well-being, their education, them growing up and being better people, having a chance to succeed, being good parents, good husbands, good and people have no understanding of the amount of time a coach goes and puts energies into that, as opposed to just that, you know, people think it's just to win a game. It's so misunderstood. It's one of the things that aggravates me. I don't know about you, Dan, but it aggravates me about as much as anything since I've been part of this other side, that the people that we deal with don't really understand it nor want to understand it.
Well, I've never heard really of anybody other than a coach when a guy had the flu and was so sick he could hardly hold his head up, took him home to his house and put him in
right.
bed, and his wife took care of him. My wife took care of him. You know, I mean, guys or whatever, guys that are hurt that don't get around. Bill Walker had knee surgery. Where did Bill Walker rehab? My house. My house, because it was one floor, and he didn't have to go up and down stairs like you would have had to go up and down stairs in a dorm. You know, it just blows my mind, guys. I'm telling you, because I've been doing this. My dad was a coach, as you guys know, so I've been around coaches my whole life. I mean, since I could walk, I've been around coaches. And I just don't know very many coaches that weren't really good guys, that just didn't really care about people, care about their players. And then to kind of, when it comes time to make major decisions regarding our game, we get closed out of it. And you are, with all the knowledge.
It drives me bat crazy, if you want to know the truth, having to defend professional people that have literally no clue yet have a platform to give their thoughts. It drives me nuts, Coach. It does, because you're exactly right. I know Seth and I talk about it on this all the time. Kid get hurt, he's at my house. Kid has knee surgery, I made damn sure I was there when he came out of surgery. I made damn sure he had the best doctor, and you guys did the same thing, and it drives me bat crazy, if you want to know the truth. There you go.
Now, Dan, you got to leave. I'm going to let you go. I know, because you got to show. But last question for you, Hugs. Big 12, real quick. And a thumb, kind of overview. What's your take on the league?
It's brutal. I mean, I look today. They had a deal on the paper. We've got, what do we got, five teams in the top 25? Half our league is in the top 25. Yep. I mean, come on. I mean, it's brutal. Five are really good. Yeah, so... And the coaching in our league, Seth, the coaching in our league. I go in there to coaches meeting and sit down where I used to before, you know, all this happened. But you go in there and you look around, you're like, man, he's been in the Final Four. He's been in two Final Fours. He's been in the Final Four. And I look around and 60% of our league has coached in the Final Four. That's unprecedented.
Yeah, it's a big time. And Hall of Famers and Hugs. By the way, I'm going to say it before so you don't have to. If you don't get in the damn Hall of Fame this year, it's an absolute travesty, because what you've done for college basketball, you've done for every program you've been at, and how you've done it. And, you know, I know if the coaches have any say, and I know you say, well, it's not a big thing, but it should be, because an award like that is earned, and it's earned over time. It's earned by how you've conducted your business. And, you know, I'll just say it, man. If you're not a Hall of Famer, I don't know, you know, who the hell is. So that's my two cents. And that's not me kissing your ass, because, you know, you're going to bust my balls anyway. That's just me telling the truth.
Well, I appreciate it. But, you know, that's not why I got in the business. It's not why you right. got in the business. You know, we got in the business because we loved the game and we wanted to help other people. And that's what I've done. You know, I was really fortunate here to Coach Gardner made me a grad assistant, and then grad assistants could recruit, they could scout, they could do all those things. And actually, Tom Izzo and I were talking about it the other day. When I went to Ohio State, I was the proverbial part-time coach, part-time and pay only.
Yeah, really.
And Izzo and I used to see each other about three or four times a week, you know, either going to scout an opponent or going to recruit a kid. And, you know, those days are gone, man. You know, but, and it's again, Seth, it's why are we at the top of our profession? We were allowed to mature in the profession. Now all of a sudden, those guys are under lock and key. They can't go out anywhere. They can't give any information. They can't watch film and help in the scouting report. They can't do anything.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's a shame because you got, but here's the difference. I can tell you the truth. I never asked what I was going to get paid until, I don't know, probably about the first time was Virginia Tech. I that's the first question guys want to know now. I never knew. Like when I took the Columbia job, when I took the pitch job, when I went to Virginia, when I went to Miami, went to Long Beach, I had no idea. When I arrived on campus, I had no idea how much I was getting paid because I didn't do it for the money. I did it because I loved, I was lost in wanting to coach. That's the only thing I ever wanted to do. And because I was impacted, by coaches.
I have no idea how much I make now. Now my wife does, but that's never been important. I mean, it's never been important. And if you look, I turned down the Miami Heat for about $5 million a year to stay at Cincinnati making $280,000, I think it was at the time. Because, and this is real quick, it's a true story. I go in on, I think it was a Saturday morning or Sunday morning, we had camp going, and Alan Jackson, Terrence Gibson, Nick Van Exel, and one other guy, might have been Anthony Buford, are sitting in my office. They're like, what are you going to do? And I'm like, I don't know, man. $5 million is a lot of money. It's a lot of money. And they're like, yeah, but, I mean, do you really need money? Now, Van Exel says that. I said, wait a minute, man. You just signed for the Max. Now, the other guys can say that. I mean, you just signed for the Max. And, and he just kind of went and said, look, seriously, man, what are guys like us going to do when there's not guys like you? Man, that stabbed me square in the heart. Mm-hmm. And I called my wife. I said, I can't, well, she didn't want to go anyways, but I said, I can't do this. I mean, I just can't do this. I can't leave these guys.
What it's all about, Hugs. That's what it's all about. There's no doubt about it. But, hey, we appreciate you. And stay healthy. Keep on grinding away. Who's your opener?
I don't know. We're going to South Dakota. And they haven't,
oh, you
haven't
guys really
South Dakota. The bracket right. yet. So, but we're going. It's really a good tournament. Really a good tournament.
Yeah, that is a really good tournament. Yeah, Creighton's in that tournament, right?
Creighton's in it. Texas A&M's in it. Memphis is in it.
But that's a good start. Well, hey, travel safe, stay well, and hopefully catch up soon, man. All right.
Well, I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.